Human beings, we are quite a curious species. We're the only species of animals that has to figure out who we are. I find that one of the most curious things about being a human being. That you're not given an identity. And you hear people talking about having to discover themselves. People talking about feeling lost and not knowing who they are or where they're going. You never hear that from a dog. I've never heard a parrot question their direction in life. Never heard any animal ever have to figure out, who am I? And yet, we are the ones who have to do that. Now, if you haven't done that yet, at least 1,000 times, because you're too young. Just wait. Life will catch up. Because in my experience, I'm 66 years old, and in my experience, life, the way I have experienced it, is designed to disappoint you. It's designed to disappoint you. Now, at first you might say, what? What? Yes. My experience of being a person, a human, a man, is that throughout my life, I have gone through several things that I think I am. And given greater value to different things. When I was younger, before I entered the seminary, and I had hair, and I was not overweight, I thought I was actually pretty hot. Now that may be a self-delusion, but I really did the dating scene and the all that stuff that you do in late high school and college. And I thought I had my identity, you know, as many times young people do. They think they've got it all figured out. And then life happens and it tears you apart. And you don't know where the heck you're going. And you have to rebuild the thing again. Maybe you find your identity in a new relationship that you've got with somebody. Maybe you find it in success in your chosen field of work. Or maybe you're seeking the honor, you know, that comes from being recognized, a movie star. But if you look at all of it underneath, it's all of it is a tremendous hunger in the human being to try and fill in, I would say mostly unconsciously, to try and fill in, who in the God's green earth am I? And why do I matter at all? Why do I matter? Parents do this all the time. You ever heard of empty nest syndrome? What is empty nest syndrome? Because a person has defined themselves so totally as parents, that all of a sudden when their kids are gone, who am I? It was bound to happen. It was designed to happen. You didn't think your kids were going to stay there for the rest of their lives. Your life was built on something that was designed to pass. Your job, your sense of importance in a company. Sooner or later, you're going to have a day in which they're going to give you a nice gold watch and watch you walk out the door into total retirement and, to some degree, from a business point of view, 100% irrelevant. And you can go on and on. You can be a movie star, you know, and all the lights can be on for you, and you can be the latest rage. But sooner or later, your skin will sag, and there'll be a new and younger version of someone who will get all the glory and all of the fame, and you will be a has-been. Now, why am I going through this litany of depressing obviousness? I'm going through this litany of depressing obviousness because until you figure out that none of the identities that you use and you think are your final self, none of them will last. And all I'm trying to do is tell you what's going to happen so that when it happens, you know that it's supposed to happen and you know that there is an answer. May not be the answer you like, but there is an answer. Look at the gospel today. Jesus is teaching his disciples. Now, Jesus has a very, very clear answer to the question, who am I? Jesus' answer to the question, who am I, is, I am related to my Father. My Father, God, is the one who gives me the direction and the purpose of my life. It's God. And you can see it throughout his life. Beginning, remember when he got lost in the temple? Even he gets a little bit heady there. And when his mom and dad are crazy looking for him, he looks at him and he says, why were you looking for me? Didn't you know I had to be about my Father's business? I mean, he totally blew away the fact that anyone would be concerned with anything else except to doing what his Father wanted him to do. And throughout his life, he is constantly tempted by fame. Notice how even today, in the gospel today, when Jesus does something and he's moving around, even today, the gospel says they were moving from one place to another, but he didn't want anyone to know about it. Why didn't he want anyone to know about it? Because he was becoming famous. And of course, the power of evil, the chief temptation that Jesus experienced in his life, was being able to be famous and recognized, but not for doing the right thing. For going after people's fame and people's attention. And constantly, when the devil took him out to the desert, that's what he offered him. Now, Jesus had this sense, and even you hear it in the gospel today, he had this sense that he was heading towards an ultimate collision with the power of evil. He had this sense that he was about to be killed and that he would rise again, but he was going to go through hell. And the constant temptation is, nah, you don't have to. You don't have to. But Jesus is constant. He is, what do you want, Father? What do you want? It wasn't about how many followers I can attract. Remember the time that there was a whole bunch of people and they were way far away from town? And what did they had nowhere to eat. And he says to the apostles, give them something to eat yourselves. And the apostle says, all we have is a few loaves and a few fish. How are we going to give thousands of people? And Jesus says, have them sit down and start giving it out. And sure enough, the message was, where God is, where Jesus is, there is never necessity. There is never want. He is the fullness. But what did the people want to do? When everybody saw what was happening, the Bible says they wanted to get him and make him king. Free food. Can you imagine? Free food. God, whoever is running for president next time, promise free food. Free food. You'll get the vote. You don't have to work. You can retire at 21. Free food. And that's exactly what they thought about Jesus. Free food. And Jesus could have been tempted by saying, God, it would be so easy. So easy. To be able to just do a few tricks and I'd have people eating out of just out of my hand. And that would have answered to some degree, who am I? But Jesus was very clear. He knew who he was. And he knew what his mission was. Now, the behavior of the apostles. Here Jesus is telling them about the thing that he's struggling with, and he's going to be arrested and die. And what are they talking about? They're talking about their identity. I'm the most important. No, I'm the most important. No, I'm the most important. Now notice, why are they talking about that? Because human beings, as I said from the very beginning, have this desire. We have to figure out, who are we? And the reason why we have to do that is because, and the church, the teaching of the church calls this original sin. Original sin, the effect of original sin. And remember, original sin is the sin, not a sin that we committed. It is something that occurred. And please understand, we do not know what it was. In the Bible, when you see the story of Adam and Eve, the story of Adam and Eve is a kind of parable. The word, the name Adam means humankind. In Hebrew, and Eve means the mother of the living. And so it's like saying every man and every woman was there. What the Bible is telling us by that story is that something happened that we got cut off from what God intended us to be. And so when we got cut off from what God intended us to be, whatever happened, and please understand, when we say, you know, that the story of Adam and Eve, the story is true, but it's true as a parable. It's like, for example, if I were to say to you, How many of you know, you don't need to raise your hands, but how many of you know the story about the little boy who cried wolf all the time? And 98% of us know that little story. Now, if I were to ask you, is that story true or false? What would you say? A lot of people say, well, that's a false story. How do you know? How do you know what is there? And even if it was false or was true, does it still convey the truth? And what's the truth that it conveys? That if you scream when there's nothing wrong, people won't believe you when there is something wrong. That is true, regardless of whether that existed or not. Adam and Eve is the same way. What we're talking about is the church is telling us at the origin of humankind, something occurred that knocked humankind off kilter, and we are the inheritors of that species which originally was created, and we knew who we were. And so when that something happened, the sin at the origin, all of a sudden we didn't know anymore what we were doing here or where are we going or who am I. Do you remember what the first effect of when Adam and Eve eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil? That's the tree of being able to be like God, not have to listen to God about what's good and evil. We get to make it up ourselves. You know, it's my decision, my choice. I get to decide what is good and what is evil. And do you remember when they eat of that? What's the first thing that happens to them? They notice they're naked. You know what that's a symbol of? Who the hell am I? What's going on here? You look at yourself. Do any other animal do that? Have you ever talked to your dog and said, you're naked? No. We're the only animal that has a concept of nakedness. The only one. And why? Because we're cut off. We were made in the image and likeness of God. And once we in some way or another, at the sin at the origin, decided we weren't going to go with what God wanted us, we became totally lost, and we have no idea who the heck we are. No idea who the heck we are. And that's why you spend your life going from, I found myself, I lost myself. I found myself, I lost myself. You spend your whole life doing this. And sometimes finding yourself lasts for years and years and years. And then all of a sudden, I lost myself. You lose your job. You get a divorce. Somebody dies. Anything that you try to put as a provisional identity will ultimately end. And you're going to be thrown back into, who am I? Until you make it your business to make sure that you listen to Jesus and you restore, you freely choose to restore your original identity and your original self. And you know how you do that? And it doesn't happen all at once. Okay, it's not, oh yes, I'm saved. Poof, I'm done. Yeah, I can never really get that from people who practice that brand of Christianity. Oh, I'm done. I'm saved. I don't have to do anything else. I'm sorry. Yeah, you may be ultimately saved. In other words, all that means is no matter how much you screw up, God's not going to let you go. That's what being ultimately saved is. But that doesn't mean that you're not going to hurt and hurt a bunch when you fall from all the different identities you try to assume. And so what you got to do ultimately, and I have always condensed this into a little phrase that is pretty much, and I mean, those of you who have heard me for, you realize I've been here for 17 years? When I got here, I had hair. Anyway, that's another issue. But I have this little pithy thing that is the center of my skull. And that is, I live my life for an audience of one. And it's constant, the battle. Because I catch myself saying, ooh, what does these people think of me? And the moment I do that, I go, I don't care. It's God that matters. Ooh, what does this group think of me? I don't care. I mean, it's nice. Please don't misunderstand. When somebody really tears me apart, it hurts. But it's not going to change me. Because you got to live your life for that audience of one. You know, I have this fantasy in my head that my life is kind of like this. I am in a one-man play, okay? And there's a whole big crowd in front of me. The people over here, oh man, they think I walk on water. Okay, oh, Father Mario, he is so wonderful. The people over here, well, they would like to see Father Mario permanently under the water. When is he going to be transferred? Has he had a heart attack yet? And the people here in the middle, y'all don't give a darn. You think the whole thing's all wet and you couldn't care less. And so the question is, who should I try to please? Should I go for my base? Should I try to convert you? Should I try? Or should I try to wake you up? And the answer is none of the above. Because way in the back, there is a little old man. And that little old man is God. And the only reaction that matters for me is what that little old man is doing. Is he applauding? Is he booing? Or is he asleep? He is the audience. And until I devote my life to making sure that he is pleased with me, the rest of it will fall apart. It may last for a little while, but it will fall apart. When somebody dies, when you get divorced, when you get fired, when you retire, when something happens. And that's what's happening in the gospel. And what Jesus says is, look, will you stop with the whole thing of who's bigger and who's better? And he takes a little child. And the child, in those days, we're a very child-focused society. In those days, children were considered the most unimportant of anybody. They were sort of shooed away. And he takes the most unimportant, probably a little servant boy that was there. And instead of saying, you want to know who's the most important, he takes the little child and he says, if you receive one of these and stop thinking about your importance, that is me. That's the one I consider the most important. And so, I'm going to close now. I just wanted to let you know this. Because it's going to happen. It's going to happen. I don't know how it's going to happen to you or to me. I mean, it happens in a series sometimes, or it can happen all at, you know, one time. One time, I'll never forget my mom's case, where my mom, you know, she was married to my dad, who was a wonderful man, and the three of us, I'm the oldest, I have a brother who's 2 years younger than me, his name is Fernando, and I have a sister 6 years younger than me, whose name is Elena. And the three of us were, I was in Denver, I was in the seminary, my brother was living at home and working in the same city, my sister was going to college, everything was, and my dad got sick. Within 1 year, my father died of cancer, lung cancer. My sister got married. I was ordained to the priesthood, and my brother was transferred to Virginia from Denver. Within 1 year, my mom lost her family. Within 1 year, she would tell me, I'll never forget this, she would tell me, Mario, sometimes I drive home from work and I roll the windows up, and I'm sure people think I'm crazy, because I'll be screaming and crying out to your dad and crying out to God, because she thought she was losing her mind. Why? Because her identity was gone. It was gone. In 1 year. Gone. Who was she? And what the heck was she doing in life? And so I want you to know that it's common. And that's what Jesus is trying to tell us. It's common. And the only way you can prepare for it is by slowly, one day at a time, transferring what you do and seeking the importance of what God wants you to do. And that is the most important part of your identity. Now, when other things happen, it will hurt. But if God is the central part of your identity, it won't devastate you. It will hurt, and hurt deeply. But you won't be torn apart. Folks, I'm not kidding you. You gotta live your life for an audience of one. That's the original purpose. That's what has become disconnected. Once that's connected, God is first in your life. And by the way, do you remember what's the first commandment? You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul, with all your strength. It's first. It's been there since we've been taught Christianity. But once that's there, then everything takes its place as second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth. And by the way, that's why you come to church. You come to church to worship, right? Do you know where that word comes from? I told you this before. It's so simple. Worth-ship. The suffix ship is the art and practice of anything. So you have authorship, penmanship, craftsmanship, discipleship, practice of anything. Were, W-O-R, a shortened version of the word worth. Worth-ship. So what does that mean? It means that God is trying to get through your thick head and mine, that He and your relationship with Him is the ultimate worth. That's the ultimate worth. And once you figure that out, then everything can take its, you know, place underneath. That's what the restoration of what the original intent was when God created us. Anyway, you have heard enough of my ranting and raving. And I will give you a reprieve, and I will shut my mouth. Thank you.